The only laser light show commissioned by the United States Bureau of Reclamation enjoyed quite a run. Though it did not feature Pink Floyd blasted at decibels sufficient to feel the bass notes rattle your skull, nor any acclaimed innovation in the world of psychedelic art, it was projected with sober intent onto the massive face of Grand Coulee Dam in eastern Washington, most summer evenings from 1989 until 2013. The premise of the show evolved from a peculiar genre of American Cold War-era advertising and Soviet-style propaganda that might be called Bad Disney, is that the Columbia River could suddenly speak. I'd heard about this summer spectacle for years. Friends had described the Orwellian flavor of the scene, where spurious claims made over giant outdoor loudspeakers and a movie screen 500 feet tall and a mile long were met with docile acceptance by nightly audiences. I made the long drive a decade ago to witness one of the final screenings. I'd heard that the Bureau of Reclamation, BUREC, one of a slate of select federal agencies that builds, manages, and distributes water and power from American dams, had belatedly come to the conclusion that the ideas projected onto the face of their flagship project were outdated. The show could not go on. This movie featured the absurdity of a cartoon salmon leaping in mock celebration over the dam, which in real life is threatening to drive the fish to extinction. Then, godlike, a menacing voice from behind the half-mile-wide monolith of concrete issued forth. Electricity, hydroelectricity, non-polluting, inexpensive production of electric power from water. It may sound like a difficult concept for a river, but I understand all that involves me. You have done what I could not accomplish alone. Through your engineering skills, you have diverted part of my course and spread my waters over the land. You have created the missing link in the cycle of life, the rainfall nature could not provide. You have irrigated the land. You have made the desert bloom. I was once a raging torrent of raw energy and thundering rapids, crashing headlong to the ocean, my potential energy spent carving the land in my blind race to the sea. Now my power is harnessed, and I am part of an efficient system that serves the people and the land. The agitprop ended with a smattering of applause, a hasty herding of children, chairs, and blankets, and a retreat to nearby RV parks, where motorhomes were plugged in at one of those neatly trimmed green lawn sites with a picnic table and a fire pit cast in concrete, where presumably parents comforted frightened children by pointing out salmon aren't cartoon monsters and rivers don't speak, at least not in English. Beyond the kitsch was the notion that the pre-dam wild river was a kind of sick, liquid Neanderthal, an angry, irrational beast not yet fully evolved, a patient in need of a cure. The old river was a profligate energy waster, a reckless teenager. It took curves at high speeds, slashed at the soil, crashed into the ocean. It took an army of government engineers, insisting on a nature contained in straight lines to make it calm, sane, predictable, profitable, productive, and amenable to the demands of civilization. To fully realize its potential, to provide a vital element missing in nature, the river had to quit being a river. Only in its transformation to a moving part in an efficient machine could water evolve into a sentient being, one that as its highest calling serves human want and need. But that's not what happened. During the first two decades of the 21st century, the whole messy truth about the legacy of last century's big dam-building frenzy has come to light. What started out as an arguably good government project has drifted oceans away from that original virtuous intent. The federal government plugged the nation's rivers in a misguided attempt to turn them into a revenue stream. Federal Western Water Control Project's main legacy will be one of needless ecological destruction, fostering a host of unnecessary injustices. The more than 90,000 dams on the American landscape can't reasonably be blamed for destroying the nation's entire biological inheritance, but they play, even for such gargantuan structures, an outsized role in that destruction. What follows is a kind of speed date with the history of the past century of Western American water control, its dams, diversions, and canals, and just as importantly, the politics that evolved from them, with a couple of prevalent themes to hold in mind.